Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife, and I have Hillary Slinger, and she is an
Hello.
amazing. Hello, everyone. Hillary has been on. This is the third time we've chatted, so it's always fun. The more of a relationship I have built up, we just instantly catch up, and we're brainstorming different topics. And I said, for me, getting a better understanding of the midwifery credentials with your wealth of knowledge, understanding if someone wants to become a midwife. Having a really good grasp of the pathways and what the schools are like and what is it your responsibility. Just like we teach as midwives, you want to make sure as a new client, they're asking the right questions to get the right care provider. And I think it's just as important for your educational pathway you choose and what schools. So, hi, Hillary, if you want to give just a brief introduction to your experience if they hadn't seen your past videos, and then we'll go from there.
Well, I've been a midwife pretty much my entire adult life, and I started out 22 years ago, or no, 40 years ago when I was 22 years old. I started out looking at becoming a midwife. And I did not want to be a CNM at that point. I felt like that the CNM training was very medical or too nurse and hospital oriented, and I was interested in being a home birth midwife. And so when I became a midwife, it was way prior to MEEK or NARM or any of these things being codified. And so one of the things that we can look at is that at that point, which was in 1980 to 82, that we were looking, that people who are home birth midwives were looking to Europe, and that the European definition at the time of a direct entry midwife was somebody who entered directly into the profession of midwifery. And so a lot of people then were called lay midwives. And some people have taken on the name in the same way as people have taken on a lot of things that may have had negative connotations. But back at the time, the feeling was that lay, that word was like a lay preacher who was somebody who wasn't trained or a member of the laity. And that in especially in the time when MANA was first being formed and people were first writing standards for midwifery outside of the ACNM, that folks wanted to find a word that didn't feel dismissive, that the word lay midwife felt like it meant untrained. And we wanted to talk about that midwives were trained and were educated, and so took on the word direct entry midwife or DEM. And at the time, because there wasn't a national credential, a lot of it was a patchwork quilt of different states that set up their own pathways to licensure or certification. And so some states, for instance, Washington State and Florida, said, oh, well, we will look at European model, which at the time was 3-year direct entry midwifery programs. And so, for instance, in Florida, the law still says that it's a 3-year program. And if people come in as an RN, it's a 2-year program, that the program can be modified for RNs. Washington State has a 3-year program. I believe California has a 3-year program, but it was a lot of them at that point were associate degrees, even though it was a 3-year program. So I'll go back to Florida. It's still an associate degree, but a 3-year associate. Some states, like the one I live in, which is in New Mexico, decided to codify apprenticeship. And so they set up a process by which you had to, there was something that was called the magic workbook. And in the magic workbook, you would show that you had a certain amount of experience and a certain amount of didactic education. So it was a formalized apprenticeship process. When NARMs and MEEK started, they were actually committees within MANA at the time. and looked at what was going on in the various states and decided that they wanted to keep that apprenticeship model, and it still exists today, and it's called PEP, or the Portfolio Evaluation Process. And so in quite a number of states, you can become a CPM without going to a university or a proprietary school through this portfolio evaluation process. And there actually, a number of years ago, there was an article that was in the Journal of Midwifery and Women's Health that compared the didactic education and the clinical education of portfolio evaluated CPMs and found that there were more hours in clinic and an equivalent didactic education for the PEP trained CPM than there was for the CNM, which I found really interesting.
So
there has been a push in the last 5 years for states that were newly licensing CPMs to require a MEEK education. And so there are, I believe, 14 MEEK accredited schools, and there are new ones being added all the time. And they run the gamut from being a certificate to being a degree. And I think there still may just be one or two that are associate degrees. There are some that have bachelor's degrees. And then Seattle Midwifery School, which was the first midwifery school in the US, is now the Department of Midwifery within Bastyr University, and they are a master's program. So it's all over the board. The thing is that's so interesting, because I've been the program director now for two different midwifery MEEK. Well, I was at a MEEK accredited school, and I'm now working at another midwifery school that is going for its MEEK accreditation. And I lost my train of thought, I'm so sorry. But I know what I was gonna say is, but when you compare the curriculum to that of a CNM program, it's really similar. And actually I sat down with the director of the CNM program in my city, and she said, oh my goodness, we're teaching the same thing. And I actually just had a friend of mine who had been through that program, and she was over at my house, and she was looking at the books on my shelf, and she's like, oh, you're using all the same books that we used in my program. So
I find that interesting, because so many CPMs, CNMs, LMs, CMMs, they all think they have different expertise and educational backgrounds of midwifery. They all think they have, one's more medicalized and one's got more alternative strength. And then when you actually look at the core of the curriculums, they're more similar than I even realized by you talking about that.
I think of them as overlapping circles.
Yeah.
So that there are pieces that are in the CNM education that are not in the CPM education, and vice versa. There are pieces in the CPM education that I see missing from CNM education. Actually, when I was doing my master's, which I have a master's in midwifery from Philadelphia University, which is a CNM program, I did my critical inquiry thesis on looking at CNM programs and an evaluation of, were they actually preparing CNMs for out-of-hospital practice? And that's a piece that's in some of them, but is missing from many of them.
Well, and I think that leads to the next discussion, because when I like you and I have talked about it, being a unique hybrid where you're like, okay, I kind of want the best of both worlds. I don't fit the typical. It was hard for me to find a CNM graduate school that fit my style of midwifery, like you were talking about. I didn't.
So where did you go?
I went to Philadelphia. I mean, Dana Perlman, I started out at another program and I was like, this isn't the style of midwifery for me. And then as soon as I met the faculty and they were all 70s hippie midwives, I was like, I'm sold, I'm joining this team. So yeah, I would love for you to expand into, okay, someone's interested in midwifery school. They've kind of narrowed down. They want to be a certified nurse midwife, they want to be a certified professional midwife. How do they even decide on schools, the different pathways, like what questions to ask and look into?
So some of it is, where do you see yourself being? I was going to say the piece that's missing from the CPM is prescriptive privileges and primary care. So for instance, I'll talk about the friend who was over here who was looking at my bookshelf. She started out apprenticing with me and she was enrolled in the National College of Midwifery, which is a CPM program. And she switched to being at the University of New Mexico in their CNM program because she felt that she wanted to be able to work more in rural communities within our state, to have prescriptive privileges, to be able to work in hospitals with women who were coming in, who were from all backgrounds in our state, and that would serve her with her ultimate goal. And she has been involved with things like the perinatal task force in our state, and also with pushing more for a midwifery model of care within the hospital system that she works in. For other people where their goal is not to do GYN or to do more primary care, and it is to really ground themselves in home birth and birth center birth and independent practice, then a CPM program or even the PEP process, depending where they live, may be more to fit in with them. I also want to talk about something that has gone on in negotiations through something called US MIRA. And it was a series of meetings that happened between ACNM, MANA, and NACPM, where they were looking at how could we get people who came through the process to have essentially what's the equivalent of a MEEK education. And they created a bridging process, and it's done through verification of continuing education. And then there are some schools that are also doing their own bridge programs for CPMs who already have a CPM through the PEP process to be able to get a MEEK degree. And so they would be given a certain amount of transfer credit in essence for their CPM credential. So there are a multitude of pathways. You know, I think that I talked to you at a previous time about my vision is always, why do we have these parallel pathways? I would love to see midwifery being midwifery.
Yeah, and there's specialties and doctors, but they all go through medical school, then they sunset
exactly
out. Like, why don't we have a core midwifery school? And then if you want to specialize in certain aspects of midwifery, you branch from that. Like, I agree with you.
I mean, that would be my ideal. And whether we look to Canada or New Zealand or Australia or other European countries, that's what they do. And for instance, in Canada, you do a Bachelor of Midwifery, and their model makes so much sense to me because the midwife follows the client. If I have a client who originally thinks she wants a birth center birth, but then we discover that there's something that makes it more likely that she'd be a better candidate for a hospital birth, I would follow her and be her midwife in the hospital. And so one of the barriers that I see in the way that it's set up in the US is that CPMs don't generally have hospital privileges. So CNMs who have home birth or birth center births can sometimes get hospital privileges, but then there are barriers that are put up by hospital associations, yeah, by boards of hospitals, and by the committees within them for, yeah, midwives to have hospital privileges. And I think we really need to look at that. I know that there is within the ACNM in my state, I actually just got a notice that there was a meeting of the privileging committee. And so they're working on making certain that there aren't barriers towards midwives getting privileges at hospitals. And obviously this is state by state is so different. So the first thing that I think people need to do is they need to look at what kind of practice do I want? Where do I want to focus? What are the laws in my state? What are the needs for supervising physicians versus collaborating physicians? And that's a really big difference. Can I get hospital privileges if I want them? And to put all those pieces together, it is sometimes like fitting a puzzle together.
Where you are at 16, 18 may not be where you want to be at 35, 50. Like, that's the other part is I always jump back and forth. Man, I should have just been a CPM because of certain barriers. But then other days I'm like, oh, I'm so glad I'm a CNM. So I guess it's just, it is, you go through these evolving challenges. Yeah. There's not one style of midwifery or scope fits your needs at any point of skills or client you're serving. And yeah, so that collaboration model, I love that, where CPMs and CNMs and physicians in a perfect world, they all collaborate together and accentuate, yeah, each other's resources. Yeah.
But you really need to look at it. And I encourage people to interview both CNMs and CPMs in their state. And I know that as an educator, it's one of the things that I have people do in our coursework is to pick a state and get in touch with the midwifery organizations, and most states have midwifery organizations that are both CNM and CPM organizations, and then to interview midwives and to ask these questions. What is good about the model you've chosen? What are the barriers that you have encountered? And I also think that what I'm seeing more and more, especially in birth centers, and some in home birth practices, is CNMs and CPMs collaborating. And that really helps as well. They can learn from each other and bring in different models of care.
Yeah, so, I wholeheartedly agree. When I was 16, I was very fortunate. I had that type A personality over analysis, and I met with all the midwives in the area. I was like, I know I'm going to be a home birth midwife. And I couldn't predict, okay, the next 15, 20 years, there weren't state regulations. What if they do come? What if they aren't here? If I decide to move versus I stay here? Like, there was a lot of, yeah, things to think about. And so you're hoping to pick the best decision based on what you think you're going to want. And yeah, it's a big decision to choose. Okay, now I want to be a midwife, but what kind of midwife and what educational pathway makes the most sense for me?
Right. And I do think that there are a lot of people who go to a CNM program thinking that they're going to learn about home birth and birth center birth. And it's not even, you know, I've had people say, oh, it does. The place doesn't matter, but yes, the place does matter.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, and the business of midwifery part of it. Are you being trained to work within a hospital system or for independent practice, which is where something like your business comes in? Is there are so many CNMs who don't understand that piece. That's the business of midwifery part.
Yeah, I agree. And that was part of why I picked Philadelphia. I wanted home birth clinicals. I was looking at Frontier. I was looking at Georgetown. I was looking at Wayne State, University of Michigan. And Philadelphia was the only location that I had to find it. They didn't have one on their list, but I had no problem. I negotiated a win-win situation for a home birth midwife that never had a student. Yeah. We got the contract, and I was very, very, I know very few nurse midwives that get to have the privilege. I mean, it was my first home birth. I remember all this labor and delivery experience, my first birth. The reality check of like, oh, I just do the laundry and the housekeeper taking care of everything. And I messied up all those towels. And I remember for 3 hours after the birth, like, Yep, I'm the housekeeper, and those little things you just take for granted.
Well, and I also want to talk about that there's a different emphasis in home birth midwifery, but also in the CPM community about the midwife. I'm trying to think about this, the midwife assuming a lot of hats and a lot of roles. And one of the things that I've seen is that oftentimes midwives who are CNMs who have worked in the hospital, who then open birth centers, will hire people to be doulas, they'll hire people to be lactation consultants. And it's almost like that same fragmentation of care. And not to say, I really respect the role of doulas and I respect the role of lactation consultants, but there is a part of me that feels like all of those are pieces of midwifery and that I don't want to be sitting at a desk rather than sitting in the room with a laboring woman and just going in to listen to the heartbeat and do that same kind of management. To me, when you take on being a home birth midwife or being a birth center midwife, that's part of the role is doing that kind of, and it's not just labor sitting, but you learn a lot from just being a fly on the wall and watching labor after labor and seeing how things unfold. And you get a sense of, yes, this is normal, even though it may not fit normal on a chart. I can feel that this is normal versus not. And that you don't learn those things when you're not spending those hours with women in labor.
Well, the example I'm thinking of, Hillary, is like the certified professional midwives, out of hospital midwives, are the expert in normal. They don't have epidurals. They don't have high risk sick ladies. They are the experts in those little subtle sounds and cues and maneuvers.
Exactly.
That's just a lost art in the hospital system. I mean, even being in nursing school, I mean, it's a, people get so excited if they're like, oh my gosh, I laugh when they say, oh, she's going natural. And I'm like, that's not natural. That's not epiduralized. Like having a discussion of like, that's not a natural birth with the stirrups up. And I put to them or to this, because they don't see it very often. And so, yeah, right. Like I stressed, like I've had the privilege of my hospital births. Yes, they're wonderful, even if they do it without medication, but it's nothing compared to a birth center home where you really can be. I mean, even I could argue the difference between birth center and home, the instinctual level that the women have in their own space.
Versus when you're in your own space. Yes, exactly. And there's never the word let. Will you let me do this? Because it's your own space. I'm a guest in somebody's home when I'm at their home birth, and it really does make a difference.
Yeah.
And turning the lights down and seeing somebody who's with their partner in the dark. And also, I just wanted to come back to when you talked about maneuvers and the things that people learn that, for instance, I think about maybe you've had a posterior baby and a cervical lip that just won't quit and figuring out, gosh, I can put somebody in a knee chest position. Mm-hmm. And you would think, oh, you're moving the baby up. Well, yeah, I'm moving the baby up because it gives them space to turn their head. And I'm not going to touch the water, because if I broke the water right now, which might, if I was in a hospital setting, they might be encouraging me to do, it wouldn't give the baby that amount of movement to get off the cervix and get their head moved into a better position. There are so many things, you know, and I do think that some of them have been incorporated into hospital settings. Use of water, for example, putting somebody whether it's in the shower or in the tub, but also sometimes it's just putting on music And I'm not talking Paco Bell's Canon. Sometimes I'm putting reggae music on because it gets somebody moving their hips.
Turning.
And right. And that's what gets that baby
when
to move
when you were
down.
Talking about the art of midwifery is your ears and your hands. And it's not the analytical side of the number crunching in the lab. So when you were talking about the simple maneuvers, I took for granted how much I did at a hospital. And then I did an in-hospital birth for a great community hospital, just covered locum for 6 months. But when I did a lady, she was swaying and swaying, and the nurse is like, she's been in transition forever. And I'm like, do you mind if I go in there? She's natural, her third baby. I could tell by the way her back was bulging and how she's acting. I just did a simple maneuver of a hip squeeze. She delivered the baby standing with the next one. And the nurses were just blown away. Like, what did you
right.
do? Because they don't see those simple, powerful
exactly.
interventions or techniques that I just, you can't read her hip if you don't look at a perineum over and over again, that rectal bulge, and I mean, probably too much TMI, but if you don't look at the actual hip changing and morphing as the baby's coming down, you can't read it.
Well, there's actually research on something called the purple line mm-hmm. as an alternative to checking dilation, is looking at the purple line of as the buttocks flatten out, and you can use that as a gate, and there's been some research studies on it.
Very cool.
You know, when we talk about being in your own house, there's also that part of making noise. And I'm thinking about somebody who way back in the beginning of my practice, I transferred in with a breech. And it's an interesting story because she was a primip. I knew she had a breech. I sent her to a doc who checked her and said that it was head down. I got there in labor. It was indeed a breech baby. And we transferred to the hospital. And she was moving along in labor. And so we got there and she was making all sorts of noises in the elevator. And I was saying to her, that's great. Those are such good noises just to keep everybody else quiet. Right. So, but that by the time they checked her, she was complete and she had a vaginal breech in the hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
but,
the cultural norm of
giving that kind
to.
Of feedback. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So being able to just to tell her that making noise is part of this, but I think that people know that at home, they let it all go. And when you said about not being in your head, this isn't intellectual, that's the space that women need to get into in order to birth. And doing that in your own home is so different than being in a hospital, which for a lot of people is like being in the principal's office at school. And also knowing that nobody's going to walk through that door who you didn't let into your home.
Yeah,
that makes a lot of difference as well.
You're a guest in their house, and it's a very different demeanor. I wish we had more studies. So as far as like clinical sites, I think it's so important, even if you never, ever want to practice in that setting, to see some births, shadow, connect with midwives in the area. Just like nursing school, you may want to specialize and be a cardiac nurse, but guess what? They rotate you through all the specialties for a little while, whether you want to work at a nursing home, whether you want to catch babies or be part of that. So I wish midwives more would look at it as that approach, like, okay, even if I'm a certified professional midwife and I don't anticipate getting hospital privileges, is it going to hurt to do a little doula work? Is it going to hurt to get involved in seeing that other side? And just, okay, so you can be a better advocate for the transfers or I think just being more open and asking your clinical opportunities of training, like creating them for yourself. If a school doesn't allow it, take the initiation. I've talked to lots of CNMs that are
for the CPM training, you do have to do some hospital observation. But what I wish is that we could get people doing some more hands-on in hospitals. And so this is where, when we talk about the merging of midwifery or my vision, I wish there was an education that overlapped both of them, where we could have one program where people could be a CNM and a CPM. But I do think that it would really help for both CPM students to see hospital births, perhaps more. There are a couple that are necessary to get your CPM, but also for CNMs to see home births. And I do think that people should check with their schools if those sites are available. I just also want to say some of it, and sadly, comes down to liability. And not all CPM practices have liability insurance. And so some of it is looking at, is there then liability for the school? And so those are some of the pieces that you want to ask questions about.
Yeah, I know, especially on the nurse midwife side, there's very few schools you even have the option for home birth purely because of malpractice. I mean, they're very transparent and honest. I mean, the financial costs and the barriers, and even to say you're going to shadow, I mean, a lot of them are very hesitant because if you get stuck in a corner and there's something happening, you're there. How much did you get involved? And it is. I mean, that's what's sad with our obstetrics and healthcare as a whole. You're losing a lot of learning opportunities because of fear of liability, or midwives even practicing because of fear of liability. So,
well, and don't make the assumption that not all home birth practices don't have malpractice, because many of them do.
I agree. And
so finding out state by state. So,
Yeah, I think when I was referencing the malpractice, there's many CNM schools. I'm not nearly as familiar with the CPM routes, but I do know of a few CPMs that have malpractice. That's a whole other topic for another day, the financial benefits. I've been talking to the owner of Contemporary Insurance and trying to help out the midwives with that aspect, because I think a lot of people, until it's not going to happen to me. It's not, I have a great relationship with her, or I care the Amish, and I'm like, but yeah, that doctor in the hospital don't care that you have a good relationship, but the Amish don't see it. So
you mentioned Contemporary, and they have a relationship with the ACNM and CNMs, but for people who are CPMs, are you familiar with Southern Cross?
I know them a little bit.
Ann Geisler.
Yeah,
because Ann Geisler has been involved in malpractice for midwives for, many, many years, well over a decade. And I know that I would see her at MANA conferences, and also when we had some meetings on malpractice, that she was involved in that as well.
I will definitely have.
So in terms of CNM programs, I know that Frontier has a reputation of doing a lot of preparation for birth center births. And that's because of who founded it, and that she was big on birth centers. And so I know that the students there do have to do a project that has to do with birth centers. I'm not as certain about other schools. I think that the University of Washington program does have home birth rotations. The one that's in my city in University of New Mexico does not, but they do have placements in birth centers. They have a placement at a birth center in Arizona, and they also do place students into a community hospital that in Gallup, New Mexico, that does very few epidurals, very little intervention, and mainly works with the Navajo population. So really diving in and finding out, who are you going to be? Where will your placements be? You and I, before we started this, were talking about also finding out, does the program expect you to find a preceptor versus that they will be finding a preceptor for you? Some of that may also depend on whether it's an on-site program or a distance program. And so looking at that as well. And there are distance programs in both the CPM and CNM educational, midwifery educational communities.
I think there's a lot of ways to train and just talk to, I mean, we're so fortunate with social media and these amazing groups of support. Just put a feeler out there, be like, okay, why did you choose this school? What are the choices out there? The knowledge that midwives and midwifery students pass to each other, because we all want to better each other. We do. So I think it's just getting yourself out there and taking the initiative of like, I'm going to meet different midwives. I'm going to learn more right from the midwives on the boots on the ground, the truth, honest answers of my area, if I'm not planning on moving, and just figure out what fits your style and where you want to be in time.
Yeah, I agree. I also think that there is a misperception out there that CPMs can't have a viable business or that they won't make enough money being a CPM. And I really want to dispel that notion.
We can also, I want to make that our
that
next
you'll
topic,
always be on 20.
Yeah, I want to make that. We'll make, yeah. I'm serious. Yeah. That's part of my big pet peeves. I have a few videos about the myths of just business ownership for midwifery. Like a lot of them think, well, I don't want to be on call 24/7. Yeah. I don't want to ever have a vacation. And like, yeah, I think that's why I created Midwifery Business Consultation, because you can have a successful practice. You can make a good living. You can have retirement benefits. You can sell your practice with time, but you have to strategize it from the to have a foundation and understanding of business for that to happen. Right. So, yeah, nope, I agree. So there's two
training.
And
also and that you don't have to be on 24/7 call, that there are ways to structure a practice so that you do get time off.
Right. And burnout is a big deal.
which is a whole nother ball of wax.
Yeah, I've done a few videos on that already. I'm very passionate about it. I went through a pretty dark place in 2017 because of the burnout. And so, yeah, I definitely agree. How can we support midwives, getting them to understand the different styles of midwifery, helping them to get a good business sense, a good clinical experience, a good training that fits them. I appreciate all your knowledge. I could talk to you for hours and hours, Hillary, but my goal is to keep these 20 to 30 minutes. We're already at 40. So let's do like a part three of your wonderful knowledge in like a month and a half. But thank you again for joining me. I always love chatting with you.
No, I enjoy talking to you as well. Thanks. We'll meet again.
Okay, bye.